There are things we can be doing as parents during the season when our kids are in elementary school to prepare them for the challenges their faith will face when they get to high school. Here's Phil Vischer.
So many kids get their faith knocked out from under them when they're in high school or college because they're being confronted with questions from a hostile source for the first time, and no one ever asked those questions in a friendly environment. You know, so the kind of questions that they're going to get hit with in high school, they don't need to get hit with when they're two, but if you present them in a gentle way when they're 7, 8, 9, by the time they're in high school, they've already got those answers.
This is Family Life Today. Our hosts are David Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. You'll find us online at familylifetoday.com. For your child's faith to sustain itself in their teen years, they need more than just a collection of Bible stories they learned when they were a child. They need to understand the big story of the Bible. We're going to talk about that with Phil Vischer today. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. You know, what most people don't know when they turn on a VeggieTales episode is that there's a mom to thank for the VeggieTales stories. And the mom we're talking about is the mom of the inventor of VeggieTales, Phil Vischer, who's joining us again on Family Life Today. Welcome back, Phil.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Phil is the guy who 25 years ago in his kitchen came up with talking vegetables, and the rest is history. He's gone on to be an author, a speaker. He's got a podcast. He's just come out with a new Bible storybook for kids called The Laugh and Learn Bible for Kids. But when I talk about your mom getting some of the credit for this,
yes.
She was actually on staff with Big Idea when you started this, right?
No. She was part of our foundation later on. When I started that, she was on staff with David C. Cook.
Okay.
She was a Sunday school curriculum editor.
And you had to run stuff by her?
She has her doctorate in child development and spiritual formation. So when I first came up with the idea, I went to her and said, there'll be vegetables teaching the Bible. Do you see any issues? Tell me if you see issues.
And well, I got to hear that conversation. What did she say?
She said three things, which became the ground rules of VeggieTales. She said, number one, you will not portray Jesus as a vegetable. I thought,
that's wise.
Okay,
that's a good
yes,
start.
I can see where you're coming from. Number two, you will not imply that vegetables can have redemptive relationships with Christ. Oh, okay, this is getting tricky.
Wow.
So this is why, to explain what that looks like in VeggieTales, Bob and Larry never pray when they're on the kitchen countertop, because they're actually being vegetables. They will pray if they're pretending to be biblical characters in a story. So if they're playing the roles of humans, they will pray. If they're actually being themselves as vegetables, they don't pray because they're vegetables.
Okay.
All right.
See,
yeah, that's deep.
I never made that connection, but now I know.
Rule number three, because people have said, will you do a story where Bob and Larry tell how they became Christians? It's like, I don't want to imply to kids that your food can become Christians.
Then they won't eat it.
Right. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Born again broccoli. We're not doing that.
But you do puppet shows and Mr. Lion accepts Jesus. You know, it's like, are we confusing kids? You know, is he now trying to lead his dog to Christ? And then she said, number three, as often as you can, the most important thing you can do is to remind kids how God made them special and how he loves them. How much he loves them. And I thought, okay, I need like a catchphrase for the end of every show. Just remember, kids, God made you special, and he loves you very much. And that is the message of VeggieTales, especially for young kids. You know, if you're 2, 3, 4 years old, that's the theology you need, is that you were made by God and you are loved by God. Love is his character. So everything starts with love, and that's where you start with a young kid. So those were the rules. Now, I didn't know that when I was 24, and I'm asking these questions of my mother, but she'd just gotten her doctorate in all this stuff. So my mother effectively saved VeggieTales from the mistakes I could have made.
You have clearly, over the last quarter century, spent a lot of time thinking about biblical themes, about character, about how to best press these things into the hearts of kids. What are most moms and dads doing that they should stop doing? Or what are they not doing that they should start doing?
Oh, that's tricky. I think we should stop overcomplicating things. Sometimes we're worried that our four-year-old isn't quite grasping the entire gospel. And they're not going to, because they're developmentally, they're not ready.
Right.
If you can't think abstractly, it's very hard to understand the concept of redemption. So many deep biblical concepts that you can't understand until you can think abstractly.
Can I illustrate this for you?
Go for it.
So my son, when he was 6 or 7 years old, one day we're driving along and he said, "Hey, Dad, I know who the chief Indian man is." And I said, "What do you mean the chief Indian man? What are you talking about?" He said, "The chief Indian man, it's to glorify God and enjoy him forever." And I thought, this catechism thing we're doing is not connecting with him the way I intended for it to.
Something that we just barely missed.
You know, so you do have to keep it simple.
Right. And I remember, you know, my great-grandfather started a Bible conference in Northwest Iowa, and I was there every year growing up as a kid. And one of the songs they used to sing every year was, "When the roll is called up yonder, when the roll." And I'm just picturing a dinner roll, you know, rolling through heaven. Here comes the dinner roll, everyone. I have no idea how that affected my theology, but I don't think it was in a positive way.
Rolls, so, vegetables. Yeah, I can kind of see it.
Everything for me is on the dinner table somehow. And my mom will tell stories about me building things out of my food, like using diced beets to make a little house on my plate instead of eating. So I don't know. There may be something there. But that's, you know, what I mean about let's meet kids where they are, not worry that they can't grasp the whole thing. What we then can make the mistake in doing is trying to protect them from hard questions way too long. You know, does a two-year-old need to know about sin or about doubts in, you know, people questioning the authority of the Bible, or where did the Bible come from, or what's with all the weird rules in Leviticus, and why do we only follow some of them and we ignore others? And, you know, so the kind of questions that they're going to get hit with in high school, they don't need to get hit with when they're two. But if you present them in a gentle way when they're 7, 8, 9, by the time they're in high school, they've already got those answers. You know, so many kids get their faith knocked out from under them when they're in high school or college because they're being confronted with questions from a hostile source for the first time, and no one ever asked those questions in a friendly environment. And that's something I've tried to do, you know, extensively with what's in the Bible, and it also comes up in the kids' Bible.
In the kids' Bible, which the Laugh and Learn Bible for Kids, you tell the story of Job, and at the end of the story of Job, in the tricky bits, because at the end of each story, you've got a little family connection, tricky bits, why do bad things happen to good people?
Yeah.
This has been around for a while, that question, right?
Quite a while.
And your answer here is this is one of the trickiest questions about faith. The simple answer is because we live in a broken world. See, when Adam and Eve sinned, God's perfect world became broken. Everything changed except God. He's always good, and he's always with us no matter what. That doesn't resolve everything for a child.
No, we always want to resolve everything. Bad things happen because we live in a broken world, and we can't explain them all. You know, some of them are just because it's bad. Mm-hmm. And when you tell the story of Job and you're looking for that answer, Job wanted that answer.
Yep.
Why did this happen? He doesn't get the answer. God shows up, and Job doesn't get his answer. God just says, "Hey, who's God?"
And Job says, "Okay, that's all I
need
to know."
Job literally puts his hand over his mouth and says, "I have spoken about things that I do not understand."
Yep.
And it's okay. We don't want to admit to our kids that there are things we don't understand, so we make up simplistic understandings. And that sets up our kids on a very dangerous path of having simplistic understandings that can be easily undermined when they leave the house.
Yeah. So as a parent, to say there are things that are hard to understand in the Bible, things I still don't understand, but here's what I do know. God is good.
Yes.
God loves us.
And we think us not having certainty will undermine our kids' faith. It actually builds it when they see us wrestling. Because they're going to wrestle. They're either going to live in denial or they're going to wrestle.
Right.
And if they never see their parents wrestle, the first time they wrestle with their faith, they'll think they're doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. And we don't want them to think they're doing something wrong because they have a doubt. There's doubters in the Bible. You know, it's easy to have doubts, and it's healthy to have doubts because it's how you get through to the other side, to faith. Because faith ultimately isn't knowing for sure. That's not the definition of faith. It's believing and acting as if you have found something to be true. And then afterwards, finding out that it is true. And that's what we need to encourage our kids to do.
So what do you say to the parent that gets to that tricky bits at the end of the Job story, and and thinks, you know, I've got a 4-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old. I don't think I want to actually bring this up because I'm going to create something in their brain that they shouldn't be thinking about yet. Obviously, they should. Why should they?
Well, it depends on how young they are.
Yeah.
You know, if they're really, really young and you feel uncomfortable about something, just skip it.
Yeah.
Just, you know your kids better than I do.
Yeah.
But don't skip it forever.
Yeah.
Because sometime between 2 and high school, they need to be able to wrestle with tricky questions independent from you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like teaching a kid to ride a bike. You know, when they're 2, they're on those trikes that aren't just not a trike that they can't fall over on, but they also have those big handles on the back, so they can't even go anywhere without you letting them go. So there's a huge distance between they're on a trike that's connected to me and they're riding a 10-speed down the road. Huge distance, and it's not just one step.
Yeah.
There's, you know, 10 steps between the trike that's connected to me and the 10 speed out on their own in the world. And it's as parents knowing, when are they ready for the next step? Now they're on a trike that's not connected to me. Now they're on a bike with training wheels. Now we're taking off the training wheels, but I'm with them whenever they ride anywhere. Now they can ride on their own.
Yeah.
Phil, what did that look like for you as a dad? Did your kids ask some hard questions? You know, did you just become a character? How did you teach this in your home with you and your wife?
I don't think I did necessarily a great job because I was so young, you know, because you never know everything you're going to know when you start with kids. Everyone starts out kind of ignorant. What I tried to do as my kids were starting to grow up was externalize my own journey with God. I realized that as an introvert, I was having a pretty significant journey with God, but I wasn't sure that they knew about it because I'm an introvert. I don't just, you know, so I had to kind of force myself. What you are experiencing with God, make it a subject at the dinner table. Bring it out, whether it's good or bad, whether you're wrestling or celebrating, whether you're singing a psalm of praise or a psalm of lament, because there's both, but we only sing one in church. We always skip the psalms of lament because they don't turn into very well-selling praise songs. Whether you're singing a praise or a lament, sing it openly with your kids, and they will see your journey. So it's not even as much as, am I teaching all the right things at the right times, but am I showing them what it looks like to live this way? So, and also put them in contexts where they're getting good, solid teaching, you know, in church and whether it's resources, because not everyone is a great Bible teacher, and that's okay. We have great Bible teachers. You know, I mean, I go to great Bible teachers. And then I try to figure out how to put those cookies down on a lower shelf for the kids. So find the good resources and work on your own journey and make sure your journey is visible to your kids. And I think that will do more than just about anything else.
I think that's so important. And it's an area that I wasn't good at as a parent because I thought my job was to live out a model existence.
To do it perfectly.
Yeah, to put my righteousness on display in front of my kids. Well, there's a name for people who put their righteousness on display. We call them Pharisees, right?
Oh, it's not Bob.
I was going to say Bob.
That's synonymous in some cases, which is sad. But I thought if I show the cracks, if I show the failings, that I'm somehow undermining what I'm supposed to be living. And it was later on that I recognized, oh, if my kids, because they're going to deal with their own failings and their own failures, if they've never seen me process any of this, they're going to, as you said, think something's wrong with me. I must not be as the kind of person who can be a Christian like my dad can be.
Right, right.
And therefore, they start looking around for people who are more relatable than I was. So I wish there'd been more confession of sin on my part with my kids. I wish there'd been more, here's what I'm struggling with or here's what I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Just living out the reality of my faith in front of my kids rather than thinking I got to have this buttoned down and have the answers for them anytime they ask a question.
I also think there's a huge role for grandparents. I am now a grandparent. I have a 2.5-year-old granddaughter. And I recognize when I was 25 and had a 2-year-old, I was not very mature. Now I'm 53 and I have a 2-year-old again.
You got more to say this time, don't you?
Yeah. So rather than pressuring my daughter and son-in-law, do it all right.
Yeah.
Don't do it exactly the way I did it because I didn't know anything when I was your age. Well, they're in the same place I was. So that's where grandparents come in. Jump in with your grandkids and teach them the Bible and make sure your kids have the resources so that they can get help. because they're struggling just as much as you did when you were that age.
I think kids want to have that conversation with adults, with grandparents. I think I was with my grandkids a couple weeks ago, and I was talking about, in a very animated voice, I wonder what it was like when God started thinking about you. And I started saying, like, this is what I see in you. This is what God put in. These are these strengths. My granddaughter, who's 5, said, God made me his daughter. And she said, but all of the daughters in the world, I'm the most special. Which I thought,
okay.
I said, you know.
That would make an interesting children's book.
Wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe you could write one of those.
All the children in the world, you are the most special.
Which then,
I have a feeling it would sell, which is a little bit scary.
I think it would, too. And then my grandson said, and of all the boys in the world, God made me the strongest. Like, well, okay, wow, well, here we
okay.
are.
So the self-confidence thing is working.
It's very high.
Good job.
Very high.
Yeah, but then there's also the community. You know, if you're not in a community of believers, like Sunday school teachers, my nieces and nephews, my wife and I have played a role in their faith journey. Not because their parents weren't doing it right, but because we all do it differently and we all bring something different to it. So being able to have interactions with other adults that aren't your parents, because there are certainly phases in your childhood where the last people you want to listen to are your actual parents. But you'll listen to a Sunday school teacher, you'll listen to a youth group leader. You know, when my parents' marriage fell apart and I kind of lost faith in my own parents, it was youth group leaders that I put my trust in. They said, okay, I'll believe this coming from you because you didn't let me down. Mm-hmm. You know, as parents, we let our kids down. It's inevitable, whether it's in little ways or big ways. But having other adults that are close enough to them that your kids can turn to them and say, well, what do you think about this? Well, did you ask your mom? No, I'll ask her later. What do you think about this? Having people in your kids' lives that can do that. That's why it's so important that you can't Christian alone. I mean, technically, you cannot Christian alone. You Christian in bodies of people, groups of people. And that's also where you raise the next generation.
That's good.
We talked about this a little earlier, but VeggieTales has been resurrected.
Yes.
Christmas time, there was a Christmas special. There are
new episodes in production right now, and we're just starting to write 8 more, so there'll be 26 new VeggieTales episodes.
What stories are you telling that you haven't told before? I mean, give us a little sneak.
Oh, there are so many stories, Bob. There's the story of the Pharisee with the radio show. That's a fun one. Really enjoy that one. No, I'm sorry. That's terribly unkind.
I can see that coming, though. I'm afraid.
Oh, could you write a song about that?
Yes. Oh, there always is a song. Has to be a song. Stories like Abigail and Nabal from the Old Testament. Stories like the prodigal son that were too short for doing a 45-minute DVD with VeggieTales. But because the new show is in a variety show format, I can do these really short, fun little Bible stories. Paul and Silas in prison. Singing in the back of the prison while the jailer, Paw Grape, is the jailer.
Got it.
Saying, what is going on here? How can you guys be happy when you're in jail?
I want to hear this song.
Yeah, Kate, did you?
What song did they sing?
Can you sing a what part song? Of a song?
I don't remember what song it was. I just wrote it. I don't memorize it. I've written like 40 songs in the last 6 months. So
these are initially going to be showing up on TBN.
They'll be on TBN first, and then they'll be at streaming places. And DVDs and whatever else. Children will ride bikes down the streets handing them out on little pamphlets. Distribution has become very challenging. So there's no more Christian bookstores, so we have to enlist children to go house to house.
Have you listened to the millennials who grew up on VeggieTales process their own experience of growing up on VeggieTales? The podcasts that are being done now about VeggieTales. Do you listen to this stuff?
No, I try not to. It gets a little weird.
I'm glad you brought
have
it
you
up, Bob.
What
should I know about it?
Well, I know that there are people kind of deconstructing everything about their evangelical childhood.
Oh, yes. That is definitely true.
So they're processing what Adventures in Odyssey was all about.
Yeah.
They're processing what VeggieTales was all about.
Yeah.
They're finding the good, the bad, and the ugly in all of it. And I just wondered if you are tuning in to hear what they're saying.
I try not to. If I see it on Twitter, you know, there's a little social media that I have to follow just to not be dead.
Right.
You know, to be written off as, too bad he died. Haven't seen him on Twitter. Because they'll actually have a funeral for you. People will show up, and then if you don't show up on social media and for 6 months, your obituary shows up in the Chicago Tribune. So I have to do at least a little bit. I've bumped into so many kids, you know, in these college-age kids or young adults who just say the same thing. They say, thank you for my childhood. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because they were in a home where there was so much media that was considered just not beneficial. You know, that is like the one thing that we can all agree on, that we actually enjoy, that my parents wanted me to watch and I wanted to watch, was VeggieTales. And to realize you've been that central to someone's childhood gives you a real, I mean, Mr. Rogers is one of my heroes.
Yeah.
You know, he was so central to so many childhoods. And to have just a little, this little bit of that is like the coolest thing in the world.
If you're deconstructing the original VeggieTales.
Yes.
Because in essence, you're getting a chance.
Am I, Bob?
Well, you're getting a chance to do this.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Because by making 18 new episodes,
yes.
You're getting a chance to say, here's how I would do it today.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are you doing today that's different than what you were doing 25 years ago?
Yeah. Not assuming that kids can adopt a Christian behavior simply because you've told them to adopt the mm-hmm. Christian behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, be forgiving. Because God says so.
Right.
You know, be kind because God says so. Trying to shift the lesson to be a little less about us and a little more about God. Because if we learn how forgiving God is, it can inspire us to want to be more forgiving rather than oblige us.
Move from character qualities to the biblical
more
anchor.
More theology.
Yeah.
More to theology. What does the Bible teach us about forgiveness?
And this is something, I bring this up because you talked about this in the Art of Parenting video series that you were a part of. And by the way, thank you for being a part of that.
Oh, you're welcome. I hope to see it someday.
Well, you're past the Art of Parenting phase, but
yes,
we can
I am.
Get you a copy yes, of it before you're done here. But you talked about the fact that if we try to produce or urge our children to produce flesh-generated character, that can work for a while, but
yes.
That's ultimately going to fail them. We got to teach them how to
yes.
live from the Spirit.
The fruit of the Spirit is, in fact, called the fruit of the Spirit.
Yes.
It's not the fruit of John or the fruit of Sam or the fruit of Mary. It's the fruit of the Spirit because you can't make it on your own. You know, I've heard so many people teach the fruit of the Spirit and say, you know, okay, now you need to do better at this. Like, well, no, that's the whole point is you can't
yeah.
do better at this. That's the Paul's point. This will only happen not when you're focused on those things, not when you're focused on behaving better, but when you're focused on walking with Jesus. And when you walk with Jesus, you become a different kind of tree. Mm-hmm. And a different kind of tree produces a different kind of fruit, whether it wants to or not.
Yeah.
And that's such a, I think, a freeing message for kids. That to follow Jesus doesn't mean you have to perfect yourself. It's not an exercise in self-perfection. Mm-hmm. It's simply following Jesus.
Be root-focused, not fruit-focused.
Oh.
Well, that's good. That works.
Did you use that in a sermon?
I wish I could say
it. But it'll be in the next sermon, won't it?
No, you know, it's sort of funny about it. It came from a kid who grew up listening and watching VeggieTales.
No way.
Yeah, my son.
Oh, wow.
He said that in a sermon, and I wrote it down like that. It's a good one, you know, because that's what we do. We're fruit-focused. That's all we do. It's all about behavior.
Yep.
It's like, no, it's about the root, Jesus, the
yeah,
mind.
And we do the same thing in other areas of our lives where we're focused on the outcomes,
yeah.
not on obedience.
Yeah.
This is why I love being able to recommend a book like Laugh and Learn Bible for Kids, because I know the worldview, the theological worldview that is informing the telling of these stories, and that this is the perspective parents are going to be passing on to their kids. And I'm just thrilled to have this. I'm thrilled that you were able to spend a little time with us and talk about this.
Well, thank you. I think a lot of parents deep down are afraid that the Bible actually doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And if we actually try to read it all with our kids, it's just not going to make sense. And this is the privilege, is to point out, no, it does.
Yeah.
The Bible makes sense. It tells a story. It's cohesive. And it's a cohesive way of life to follow Jesus.
And Phil, you've done a great job of threading the whole storyline of seeing Jesus from the beginning to the end. It's beautifully illustrated. And I would encourage every parent to get this book, every grandparent, because you will love it. It's deep, and yet it's simple. And it's something that every household, I think, should have this. I'm going to get these for our grandkids. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We've got copies of the Laugh and Learn Bible for kids. That's really for elementary age kids. And then we've got the Laugh and Learn Bible for little ones. That's for younger preschool kids. Go to our website, familylifetoday.com, to get your copy of either of those or multiple copies if you'd like. In fact, we're doing something. I mentioned this earlier. We're doing this week. Those of you who are longtime Family Life Today listeners, and you know who you are, you've listened for a while, you like the program, you tune in regularly. We want to ask you to join us as Family Life Legacy Partners. And David Robbins, who's the president of Family Life, is here with us. Explain for our listeners what a legacy partner is.
Yeah, legacy partners are people who come alongside Family Life, and I believe in what you do. I believe in getting biblical, practical help and hope out to parents and families and marriages, and they join us month to month. They commit to a specific amount and join us month to month in helping us be on air in your community. And we did a survey recently and asked our legacy partners why they give month to month, because it's certainly a commitment. Right. And Julia told us, and I quote, "We truly believe that the family is the conduit for Christ in neighborhoods, towns, and states, and that family life is a true vehicle of God's plan and love for the family and one of the major hopes for the future." Thanks, Julia, yeah. First of all. And let me just say thanks to Legacy Partners, because that is our desire, to be a conduit for Christ in your community.
Well, and we'd like to see our number of Legacy Partners grow this month. We've had some friends of the ministry who've come along and said, we'd like to help you with that. So they've agreed that anybody who this week becomes a brand new Legacy Partner, they're going to match every donation that new Legacy Partner makes in 2020. They're going to match it dollar for dollar up to a total of $30,000. That's a pretty good deal. So your legacy partner gift gets double duty when you become a legacy partner this week. In addition, we'll send you a copy of the Laugh and Learn Bible for Kids as a thank you gift, the book we've been talking about today. We'll send that to you. And we'll send you a certificate so that either you and your spouse or another couple you know can attend a Weekend to Remember Marriage getaway as our guests. That's because we love our legacy partners and we want to connect with you. In fact, we're going to be having a phone call next month, about 2 or 3 weeks, with legacy partners. This is just something where Dave and Ann and I get on the phone and do some interaction with legacy partners about questions you've got about marriage and family or ideas you have for our program. It's just a way to connect with those of you who are highly invested in what we're doing. If you'd like to become a new legacy partner, take advantage of the matching gift that's going on, get the Laugh and Learn Bible, get the Weekend to Remember gift certificate, go to familylifetoday.com and sign on. Say, I want to become a legacy partner, or call us and we'll take care of it by phone. The website's familylifetoday.com. The phone number is 1-800-358-6329. 1-800 F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. Those of you who are going to join us as legacy partners, thank you in advance for being part of the team. We're grateful for you, and we appreciate you, and we hope to take full advantage of this matching gift opportunity this week. So pray for us on that, if you will. Now, tomorrow, we're going to transition from talking about having little kids at home to talking about when the nest is empty. What happens after all the kids are gone? Jill Savage is going to join us to talk about having a full life when the nest is empty. I hope you can join us for that as well. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a Crew ministry. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow.